Well, good morning, everyone. So it is good to see all of you today. So yesterday we had the services for Norma Conner, of course a beloved member in our church, and I had a chance to do that service over at the funeral home there in downtown Perry, and afterwards we went out to her burial, and it was interesting. It was in a little town called Tippettville. Have any of you heard of Tippettville? It is like way out there. And what was funny is usually when I do these gravesides, I usually ride with the funeral home. Usually they've got a seat in the car, and I just sort of ride out there with them, and it's kind of easy and relaxing. But on this particular occasion, there just wasn't room, and I needed to drive my truck, which is fine, except I didn't come prepared. And my gas tank was already on empty when I left. And I tell you, I think we drove for 45 minutes. I saw about 12 tractors and zero gas stations the entire way, driving like 20 miles an hour through all the farms and backcountry. And it was beautiful, but I was like, I am going to run out of gas. Like, this is really bad. Like, as soon as I see a gas station, I'm going to pull out of the, you know, the line of cars. You got a police sled and everything, and just get me some gas. Never saw a gas station the entire time. I get there, and like, the what do you call that thing? The thing on the thing, you know? It's like resting against empty. It is like there's nothing left on there at all. And finally, we pull into the cemetery, and I'm like, okay, I really hope there's a gas station close by when I leave. So I started asking around. It was 9 miles. 9 miles in the other direction to the closest gas station. And I let several people know that when they went home to look for me on the side of the road, okay? And I can't, you know, promise or guarantee this, but like I said, my warning light was on before I left. And somehow I made it all the way to that gas station. And I think it might have been miraculous, okay? This was my unending food coming out, but it was unending gasoline. So thank God for that. It was an interesting day, but it was a lovely service. I was very honored to be able to be part of it. So as you probably noticed in our opening, we have a new series we're starting. This new series, we're simply calling it Faith, Hope, and Love. And it has been said in our world that there is a God-shaped hole in every person. Have you ever heard that? That everyone sort of has this emptiness that they need God to step inside of. It's a long since evangelistic tool to talk about that God-shaped hole. We are born innately with a desire to seek the divine. Some say that the very fact that we have that desire within us to seek something greater than us says that that was put inside of us for a reason, that there's someone out there who wants us to look for him, and that is the God of the universe. It appears to be written into our DNA that in some part of us we always seek that which is greater than us. And the fact that we desire water and water exists, and we desire food and food exists, and we desire God, and there's this idea within us that God must exist to meet that need. And throughout history and throughout all the world, people have always believed in a God. It is the vast majority of people in this world of this very day, throughout all of the world and throughout all of history, people have believed in a God. It is written into us. There is a God-shaped hole that every person is attempting to fill, and it's written down to our DNA level. And by all means, those who deny the existence of God are rather newcomers in the global scale. The historical scale, the idea of denying that anything else exists is almost brand new. And as much as I know that there are reasons to question things, and there are reasons to ponder and to think more deeply than we sometimes have, it certainly does seem that some parts of society, things have gotten more difficult and more confused than they used to be. But without a foundation for morals to even exist, something to tell us that this is right and this is wrong, without an understanding of our divine purpose and why we are here, when we don't have these things, some aspects of life get confused and difficult. And that is where I think the world finds itself. If the church is supposed to speak to this confused and difficult part of the world, and how we are supposed to somehow reach out to this longing within human beings, the church has to find some kind of wisdom of past generations to share. And the question is, what is the church supposed to say? What does the God-shaped hole look like for our generations? And in particular, what gifts does the church have to give? When you look at a world that's longing and hurtful and confused, what gift does the church have to offer that might be more persuasive than we even give it credit for? And for me, the answer is faith, hope, and love. These are distinctly different from everything in our world today. And while they are spiritual gifts meant for us, they are also meant to be given back to the world as an alternative to the confusion and everything we see around us. Faith, hope, and love. This comes out of 1 Corinthians 13, which is famously the love chapter, but it concludes with this final phrase that many of us have heard if you've been in church at all. And now these three remain: faith, hope, and love. But, and it wants to make sure you know this, the greatest of these is love. These are the gifts that we have to offer a broken world. And they're more than just a theoretical thing. They're more than just a nice thing to say on Sunday. When we really break it down, these things we have to offer are truly world-changing. If we live it out, if we understand it right, if we see how they meet the needs of the things going on around us. And I want to take some time in this series to look into that more deeply. So this series is going to look at these three terms and see them as unique gifts that we have to offer the world, and how each of them perfectly meets the needs and the opportunities of our moment in history, and how they offer an alternative to this confused life. And I hope you'll hear and understand that. And I guess the first thing I want to say, and that I want to argue, and that I want to bring to the forefront, is that these are, faith, hope, and love, are spiritual gifts, according to the Apostle Paul. And so in order to understand the context and all that's happening, we need to talk a little bit about Corinth. Corinth is a city in Greece, not all that far from Athens. Corinth was an important city in its time, and there's a church that started there that Paul founded and that he spends a lot of time in the New Testament talking to. You notice there's 1st and 2nd Corinthians, and they're both very long books because he had a lot to say to them. Corinth itself was sort of bombarded with this need to make their faith into something in which they could break themselves into tears. The elite Christians, those who have really figured it out, you know, and they sort of sat by themselves, and those who were maybe not quite as good Christians sat next to themselves, and all their unity gets broken up, and this becomes a playfully ridiculous, awful version of the faith that they are supposed to be living. And because they are breaking themselves into these tears, Paul has a profound need to try to correct their understanding of things. So let's go back to, say, 1 Corinthians chapter 12. And if you go back to chapter 12, and we'll just pick up in verse 4, you'll see him kind of hinting at some of these ideas. And in particular, he's trying to help them with spiritual gifts. So he says this: there are different kinds of gifts, but the same Spirit distributes them. There are different kinds of service, but the same Lord. There are different kinds of working, but in all of them and in everyone, it is the same God at work. What's the emphasis of that? One God, all the same. So, Picture a community in which they're breaking themselves into tiers. And one of them says, okay, listen, I am part of the elite because I have achieved this much. And my spiritual gifts are standing up in front of people and telling them what's what. And because I have this incredible ability, I should be in the upper echelon of the tiers of Christian faith, correct? No. Okay, thank you. Or someone says, well, I have, and because this is first century and this appears to still be going on, I have miraculous abilities, and I can take someone who's sick and I can bring them up here and I can pray over them and they will instantly be healed. Surely I am in the upper echelons of spiritual gifts. No. And Paul emphasizes to them, look, this is not what spiritual gifts are supposed to be about. You realize that there is only one God, and therefore there is one people of God. And it doesn't matter whether you teach, or you preach, or you heal, or you simply clean the bathrooms. Your spiritual gift is part of it. And so he's trying to refocus their minds away from using those gifts to separate themselves in order to use them to benefit the church. Verse 7, now to each one, the manifestation of the Spirit is given for the what? Common good. You mean my abilities aren't just for me? So if a member of our band were on the stage and they were singing and they were showing off and they were doing everything to their own glory, would they be doing right? No. Their gifts are meant for the broader good of the church. That's the whole purpose of them. To one, there is given through the Spirit a message of wisdom. To another, a message of knowledge by means of the same Spirit. To another, faith by the same Spirit. And to another, gifts of healing by that one Spirit. Notice he says that over and over again. These are spiritual gifts. And now, I want you to take a moment. Because there's a lot of material here, we're going to fast forward. I'm going to sum up for a couple of paragraphs here, okay? And then we're going to ultimately come back to where we were. So now, Paul, trying to address this need of the church in Corinth and their need to divide themselves into tiers, to be disunified, to use their spiritual gifts for their own glory, he describes the purposes of gifts as being for the common good from one God and one Spirit for the purpose of the church. And then he goes on, and the next few paragraphs are his description of the church. And he uses a particular metaphor that, if you've been around church most of your life, you may have heard this before. But he uses the metaphor of the church as a body. And this is the famous, you know, the church is a body. If all the church were an ear, where would the sense of seeing be? And if all the church were an eye, where would the sense of hearing be? And so on and so forth. And he says that each one of you is a part of this body, and each part is really, really important. Unless you're the appendix, it's important, okay? Every part of the body matters, and you can't get rid of any of it. And more than that, every part of the body has its own kind of honor, is appreciated in its own way. Some of them may not be as much on the forefront as others, but they're each honorable. And because of that, the focus is the unity and the working together of the body. And this is his idea of trying to get them on the same page. This is what a church is supposed to be. So you do not divide into tiers, and you do not separate into the elites and the non-elites, but you become one single body, fulfilling the function with the gift that you have been given to the glory of God. And he says, it's okay to want great gifts. But let me tell you what a great gift is. And then we get to chapter 13. Chapter 13 is the section that is known as the love chapter. And it is often read at weddings, you know. Love is faithful. Love is kind. It does not boast. It does not envy. So on and so forth. But the entire point of that is to say that, look, you want the greater gifts, but let me tell you what a greater gift is. Love, for example. It says, you may not know this, But even if you could heal all the people in the world and suddenly get rid of sickness, if you do that without love in your heart, what good is it? He says, you may be able to prophesy, to use another sort of old miraculous type of thing, where God can speak through you, but if you don't have love in your heart, it is no good whatsoever. You can give all of your body to the flames and every piece of wealth that you have to the poor, and if you did not have love in your heart, it would be of no good. And he says, listen, you want the greater gifts. It's not the ones you get to show off with the most. It's the ones that are coupled with true Christian love. So change the way you think about spiritual gifts. And then, in the latter part of the chapter, he makes one more point that's easily missed. We're now down to 1 Corinthians chapter 13. We're going to pick up in verse 8. And this is what he says. Still talking about love. Love never fails. Then he throws in this. But where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part and we prophesy in part, but when completeness comes, what is in part disappears. Keep going. When I was a child, I talked like a child, I thought like a child, I reasoned like a child. Except for me, as I was a step above other children. My wife's laughing at me. When I became a man, I put the ways of childhood behind me. For now we see only reflection as in a mirror. Then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I am fully known. Let me tell you what I think is going on here. I think what he is trying to emphasize is how each of these spiritual gifts, many of them will not matter once we have come to know Christ. That is, when we approach the end, we will not need prophecy. Why? Because God will speak directly to us as he would any other person. What good will it be to be a prophet when you've been united to God? And when it comes to having a deep secret knowledge of the universe, which, by the way, was a very Greek thing to believe, what good will it be to have this secret knowledge that you can boast and share with your friends when you live beside the one true God? What good will it be to heal masses of people when in the end God will be our direct healer and there will be no more sickness? You are focusing on the gifts that pass away. I want you to focus on the gifts that are eternal. I think that's what's going on. And if that's the case, then I can put a context to the verse we started with, verse 13. And now, at the end of all things, these three will remain: faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. You want the great gifts? Don't pick the ones that pass away. Pick the ones that are eternal. And then you will find what it means to be great in God. Switch your mindset and think truthfully. And I think that is what's going on here. And so we get this idea that faith, hope, and love last. Faith lasts because it's the trusting God and believing Him that He means well for you in life. When you have faith in God, you believe in something, and it gives you something to stand on, and you feel in your heart and know that there is a benevolent God who cares about you. And while all things may not be easy, He ultimately has your best interest in mind and will ultimately save you in the end of time. That is a beautiful spiritual gift that your faith offers you. And when you have hope, I realize that at the end of time, it may feel like hope doesn't need to exist because we'll already be with God. Everything will already be here. But at least in the here and now, and in another way in heaven, that hope and that focus and that looking and that depending on God for every single thing will absolutely be a part of our life for all of eternity. When we look to Him and hope in Him, it is a spiritual gift. It is something that here on earth changes us. You do not get up in the morning without hope, and you do not continue on through hardship without hope, and you do not continue to try without hope, and you do not banish cynicism in your life without hope. Hope is everything, and it's a spiritual gift that's been given to us to sustain us. It is one of the best gifts that exists. It has no place without the Spirit of God and love. Love is the very essence of God and His greatest command to His people. And it's not exactly like the love that our world may talk about, but it is the love that says that we care, that we love. And it is an extension of God's love for us. These gifts will never disappear. And they're not small. And they're not used to show off. They're used to sustain. And in so many ways, these are the greater gifts. Pursue these. Faith, hope, and love. I also think that while these are meant for us, they also present a stark contrast to our world. Because I don't think that these kind of things just exist out there in the world without God. When we talk about faith, the world says, why should you believe in something you can't see? It says, why would you trust anyone other than yourself? Everyone else will let you down. Don't trust in anyone else. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Trust only yourself, and you'll protect yourself from all that danger out there. That's what the world says. And faith says, no, believe in something. It's worth it. It'll give you purpose and meaning and reason to live. And it's well-founded based on the historical records we have. Faith is a good thing. When we talk about hope, the world says that's a fairy tale. The world is determined by chaos and natural selection and nothing else. If you're not strong, you won't move on. That's what makes the world a stronger place, but it also makes it a more miserable place. So banish that hope in your soul and move on and accept the hard truth. And faith says, no, hope is a necessity of life. Well-founded in a God who's reliable and faithful to the end of time. Hope is the one thing you need to continue to survive. It's why the gospel has never been stamped out and never will be. Because hope continues even when there's only an ember left. Hope is enlivened and inspirited by or given breath by the Spirit itself. And it never dies. Hope is one of your greatest gifts. Don't banish it now. The world says that love is a certain kind of thing, that you need to give up all that you have in order to chase some fairy tale perspective that doesn't require anything of you. In fact, it should only benefit you. Love should only help you achieve greater fulfillment in life. And if it doesn't, move on. But faith says that no, true love is sacrificial. It's committed beyond everything else. It's truthful in every way, and it's conditionless. Your love continues no matter what, because it is something you have promised to give. And what really matters is not that you are fulfilled, but that you fulfill the role that you have been given in life. To love that person, to take care of that person, to raise them up to the best of your ability will give you purpose and meaning and reason beyond anything else this life has to offer. And accepting that is part of the path to your finding fulfillment in doing the things you're already called to do. I believe with all my heart that when we follow faith, hope, and love, we'll find that the world has nothing like it to offer. It is only the church that can offer this to a world that is growingly confused and cynical and hurt. And sometimes, just maybe, the people of the past weren't really dumb. Maybe they knew something about the way that life worked, and maybe there's even something we can reclaim from them of the old ways. Because life was less confused then. We knew our purpose. We knew who we were. We knew why we were. And we knew whose we were. I truly believe with all of my heart that faith offers an alternative. That I believe in the coming generation, people are going to seek out more and more. Those who are tired of the ways of this world are looking for an alternative. And I pray to God that the church is ready to offer it to them. Because what we have is not what the world has. And these spiritual gifts, while meant for the church, also present an alternative for those needing something more. Life is not chaos. It's purposeful. Fulfillment is about accepting our role and doing it well. The abandonment of basic guardrails and guidelines in life is not healthy. Tolerance and love are not exactly the same thing. We can disagree and respect one another because both can easily be held on to, because we both care passionately. The old ways were never stupid. They needed some revision, and thank God we have revised some of them. But the old ways had a wisdom that needs to be reclaimed, so we no longer throw out the baby with the bathwater, so to speak. God is active in our life, and He wants to be a part of us, and He's been pursuing us from the moment we were born. If only we would ever stop for a moment and turn around and hear it. And the one thing He needs of us is obedience, that we might actually give in to His ways and find our peace. We have a fantastic alternative to offer. I think we sometimes downgrade that. We imagine that we have to entice people into the church with either fear, you know, you're going to hell, or you can walk up on this stage today. Well, let me think about that. Or we think that we've got to somehow win them over with really fancy lights and fog machines and, a really great product that they can take home and be proud of. And we give them just the best gifts possible for visitors. You know what I mean? Like a new iPad to take home. We'll win them over for Jesus somehow. And we disregard how important the alternatives of the gospel are to the confusion and chaos of life today. I hate to say they're actually attractive. And for those who are willing to submit themselves to the ideas and to really understand that they're being called onto a mission, that they have to repent of their sins and attempt to live more for Christ, I think they will find it a vast rejection of what is wrong with this world, and an embracing of something they've always longed for that might actually fill that God-shaped hole in their heart. We have something beautiful to offer. Yes, faith, hope, and love are the gifts offered to us, but I dare say it is our duty to offer them to the world. And I just think, that because the gospel never returns empty, that it will continue to draw people if we truly preach the gospel to them. Never, ever has the gospel failed. Here's my application points. I want you to take time this week and consider how the message of the gospel might be attractive to someone disillusioned in this world. I think if you think about it a while, you'll see The people need this alternative. And I think we have something to say to this particular moment in culture. And number two, I want you to spend time praying that you'll be able to offer some spiritual gift to someone who needs it. We've been gifted these things by the Spirit. Is there something you can do for them to show them love or to show them hope or to show them faith? And how much it means to you and in your life, what a difference it's made. And when you can offer that to them, I want you to not miss that opportunity. This really is a chance. And so these are my applications. I hope that you hear it. I hope you take something with you this week. And next week, we will dig in a little further into each of these issues, faith more specifically, and we'll see what we can do to understand these as the gifts God has given us, and in some way, shape, or form, the gifts we get to offer as an alternative to this world. So if you will, bow your heads. God, I thank you for loving us enough to gift us these things. God, this world is a difficult place, but we are so grateful that there is hope, that there is something to believe in and a purpose in life, and that we are called to love other people. God, these things are hard to find in a world that believes itself to be dog-eat-dog. But Lord, in the church, we know that we are truly a part of your kingdom instead, where the rules are different and often upside down. I pray that we can live that out. And for all those in our community and in the world who are confused and struggling to figure out their place in the grand scheme of things, I pray that they take a moment to consider something different. And in fact, that they find themselves as amazed by the God of the universe as we are, drawn to him and drawn to faith in you. God, I pray that we pray for those people. I pray that they know and feel your reach and your grasp. And I pray ultimately, Lord, that more people find you. And it's in your Son's precious name we pray. Amen.